Welcome to INSEAD CareerCast. This is the first episode of the Walk the Talk podcast. I'm your host, Charles LaBelle. You know, one of the best parts of working in careers is that we get to work with so many great people as they go through our programs. And we get to connect them with those in our community, faculty, alumni, and we get to see them form their own connections. These are great people with great stories to share. And that's the whole point of this podcast, to connect you with these people, to hear their stories. And maybe they're people that you'll connect with yourself, or maybe you'll take something from these conversations, some insights, or maybe even some inspiration. These are fun conversations with really great people. So I hope you enjoy. And if you have any feedback, please don't hesitate to connect. Also, if you know anybody that would be an interesting guest, or if you yourself would be interested in joining me, please don't hesitate. Let's connect. In this first episode, we have a conversation with Michael Gallant, who's an INSEAD MBA, a 17J based in New York City. One of the themes that comes out of this conversation is the value you get when you build meaningful relationships. And you'll hear through the conversation I call him Mikey, and that's because we're friends. Since his time at INSEAD in 2017 on that first venture capital trek to London, through to all the years when I show up in his office in New York with pre-MBA students, all the way through to now in building this podcast, Mikey and I have developed a real friendship. In addition to the theme of building meaningful relationships and the value you get, Mikey does talk about sales, the importance of selling yourself, and he also talks about focus and shares stories around these three themes. And one of the points that came out of the conversation that I particularly enjoyed was how the things that are really meaningful are the things that are named. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. Thanks for listening. All right, INSEAD, welcome to the INSEAD CareerCast, the Walk the Talk podcast. I'm really excited to be with you today because we've got an incredible guest with us. It's Mikey Gallant. Mikey's in New York. He's a 17J. And Mikey, thank you for being the first guest of our Walk the Talk podcast.
Thank you, Charles. It is a great honor. It really is. So thanks a lot for all that you're doing for future generations of INSEADers. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, Mikey, I want to start with your story because this is where the sauce is. Can you give us a little bit of background about what you're doing today and how you ended up there?
Sure. So as we speak, I am transitioning from a role in private equity in New York, a family-owned PE, into building or actually growing a real estate business together with a partner in the Midwest, a multifamily real estate business. And while doing that, I also have a podcast that I tremendously enjoy and that brings a lot of magic to my life. And I love that word magic, and I'm probably going to use it a couple of more times. And my story in 2 minutes or under, I'm Israeli. I grew up in Israel. I was a musician in high school. Like most Israeli boys, I joined the military. I drafted. I was 18 plus. I spent 5.5 years as a special operations officer. Led a team of SEALs, got out, decided I wanted to do business, and I didn't have anyone in my family that did business, so I decided instead of going to do an undergrad, I would just start a business. And so because I had some background in diving, I was a competitive free diver and a combat diver and a scuba diver, I opened a dive school, and soon after, someone gave me a break, and I joined as an intern to a firm that did investment banking startups, which was big then and still is in Israel. And then I just went on to start a couple of companies and a couple of ventures, and most of them failed miserably, and some of them failed, like, not miserably. And at 29, I was like, okay, maybe I should get a grip, you know, I need to go to school, and I was lucky enough and fortunate enough to get into INSEAD without an undergrad, which is, it happens. Like, you can do it, but it was quite unusual. And it was one of the best years of my life. I say it was the best year of my life, but now I'm married. My wife's soon to have a baby, so I can't say that anymore. But it was definitely like the top 1 or 2 or 3 years of my life. I learned a ton. I met amazing people, and I learned a language that serves me today, a business language. Also, a language like Spanish, that was also a part of it. And that's it. I got out. I was quite active in INSEAD. Maybe we'll discuss that in a bit. But I got out. I joined a family-owned PE in New York, doing M&A, especially in real estate, but also in like traditional M&A, healthcare, and you know, trading businesses and so on. And that's it. Now I'm after 3 years, pivoted about 6 months ago, started to build a business, and now we're going full throttle. We're about to close our first big deal in a month and a half or so.
Well, so the first thing is that I'm super excited for you, for being married, having the kid. Those are the greatest things in the world, and nothing will ever supersede. And I'm super excited to hear you going on that journey in your life. And I can't wait to see you as you go through that part. The second thing is that I'm going to miss you in being on my New York trek as I get take the pre-MBAs through to New York. I loved the moment every time we're sitting around that table where you ask them for their pitch and you just see deer in headlights. And they're like, wait, what? I got to do this now. And that's one of my favorite moments. However, I can't wait to see what's next in the real estate business you got going on in the Midwest, which is my region. So I'm excited for you for that too. So we can talk a little bit about that. Before we do, please, I'm really curious to hear why you went into INSEAD. You gave us a little idea. You wanted to get some business acumen, some structure around this, but what did you think you were getting into in INSEAD? What did you think you were going to get out of it? How did you get into it? And what changed along the way?
That's a very good question. I think, you know, when you learn things by doing, let's say you started a business or you led people in a military activity, right? You learn leadership through doing. When you started a business, you learn how to sell through doing. And maybe you understand some notions of operations or financing, but there is something, for me, a lot of it was the knowledge. There is something in learning things in a structured manner that gives you, you know, this incredible tool to go on in the future and just build big things. So I felt, I always felt I had a deficit, because I would, you know, I would say, oh yeah, this is, if we invest this right, we could do a 20% IRR, and maybe we can, you know, the return on investment would be like 30%, blah, blah, blah. But I only knew it because I heard someone else say it, and I didn't actually know what it meant. And I think a lot of things are intuitive, but finance, unless you go deep into it, you don't really understand it. And today, you know, my world is basically raising money from investors, getting, securing bank debt. And you talk to these bankers or investment bankers, and unless you are 100% on top of what you're saying, you're going to get like, like you're not going to cross the door. So INSEAD gave me a lot of practical knowledge. And that was one of the purposes of me going there. The second is that it really did give a language. And what do I mean? When you sit in Pierre Lyon's advanced finance class, the chances are that you won't remember the formula he's using 2 or 3 years down the line. But what you will retain is that intuition and that understanding of what impacts what and how and why and what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And so in a way, what you're doing in INSEAD, in some portions of it, is that you're training your intuition by constantly, you know, throwing things at it, and that repetition and that, you know, going deep into things and then going shallow and then going deep again. And by training it, you become more of an expert. So sorry, that was a long babble, but the first thing is knowledge. The second is language. And the third, you know, it almost goes without saying, is the people. I've been in social settings where there are a lot of, you know, alpha females and males, like very dominant people, strong, talented, capable, both in business, definitely in the special forces. But there is something about, you know, sitting in INSEAD for that first time, you know, in a conference room, and you look around and you're like, holy cow, these people are like much smarter. They're like, not only they're smart, but they're also like super successful, and they're, most of them are really nice and, you know, and friendly. And you're like, wow, I'm in good company. And you know, some of the most meaningful relationships in my life and some of my closest friendships grew from that 1 year, as odd as it might sound. And I have my study group. We talk every month for an hour, conference call. Every month. It's been 3 years. Every month we're on a conference call, the six of us. We went to a wedding, and, you know, in in Brazil. I have a friend who wasn't in my study group, and we meet every Thanksgiving for a week to do something completely wild, like in the Yukon or in Arizona, or in a couple from our class just got married. So it becomes your group of friends, another group of friends that is just a bunch of amazing people. So yeah, that's it. Knowledge, language, friends, friendships, and people.
So now we know what you got out of it, but you're going in, you're looking around, and you're seeing all of these smart people with all these qualities and attributes. What was your approach? How did you think about what is it that's important for me to do? Because, you know, you get in here and there's all different types of options. But what was it that you saw that when you looked around and what was important to you, how did you approach that?
I'm going to paraphrase the Chinese philosopher who wrote The Art of War some, I don't know, 2,500 years ago. And this is not an exact quote, but says that if you know the opponent and you don't know yourself, you're going to lose, right? If you know the opponent and yourself and the battlefield, you know, you'll be doing a very good job in your endeavors. And that is only to say, when I came to INSEAD, I gave a very hard and long thought about what I can bring to the table that would create value to the school and to my classmates. And the reason for that was simple. I obviously came with a deficit. I didn't have an undergrad. Sure, I did the GMATs and the whatever it is, but so many people around me already knew all this stuff. And I was clueless. Microeconomics, macroeconomics, like operations. Some of my friends, you know, they did this course like twice before coming to INSEAD for their bachelor and their master's, and I didn't. So I said, look, if you want to learn, you have to learn not only through classes, but through people. And in order to do that, you have to bring something of your own to the table to create value for other people. So I would say you really want to know your strengths and your weaknesses. And then when I came in, my strategy was basically to focus, because I knew that I won't be able to do everything and anything. And I knew what I wanted to get out of it. I wanted to learn. I wanted to meet people. I wanted to learn a language. And I also knew what I could contribute. I came from entrepreneurship. You know, I understand the practicalities of things, not only the theory, which is I thought could be of use. I don't like the word leadership, but I definitely managed or led people in unusual situations, which I thought could contribute. And yeah, and I, you know, I like to think kind of, I don't like to say outside the box, but I think different. So I thought maybe I can bring that as well. And, you know, what always helps is like smiling and being friendly and nice to people and, you know, and being hospitable and trying to form meaningful relationships. Going in, I said, look, I'm probably not going to be, you know, on the dean's list, but I should make good effort to work hard and get good grades. I want to learn through my peers, so I better be friendly and nice and hospitable and, you know, communicative, so they'll be willing to share their knowledge and, you know, resources with me. And I also wanted to add something to the table, you know, and to stand out. So I brought my strengths, which were, you know, more on the entrepreneurial side and kind of knowing how business works. And it paid off.
So tell me a bit more about when you're sitting in here and it's the focus. Like, what are the things that you had said, what you learned, what you knew your strengths and weaknesses are, but how do you focus? I mean, let's get down to the nitty gritty. What did you actually Sure. do to maintain your focus?
I would say a few things, and this is, I think I might have mentioned it before, but I'm not sure if I was born or at a very young age, I developed like a lack of FOMO, which is the fear of missing out. I probably have it, but to a very small extent. And in INSEAD, it plays a crucial role because everything, whatever happens, there are three other things happening at the same time. I told myself a couple of things before I came to INSEAD. I said, I'm not going to drink more than one drink per night because I don't want to become hungover and miss the day after and not remember what happened. I want to remember this experience. I'm going to work out every day, even if it's 10 minutes. But most important, I said, look, I'm probably not going to be friends with 500 people. So, but I would like to create meaningful relationships with maybe 10 or 15 or 20 people. And in terms of the job search, I said, look, I know what I want. I want to become a right-hand man to either a CEO or an owner of a big company in an international market. And I actually wrote that down on a piece of paper. And that was my mission statement. And I read it out loud to myself every day when I woke up. And every night before I went to bed. And this might sound like, you know, positive thinking, Tony Robbins, Dale Carnegie kind of stuff, which both of whom, by the way, I love. But in reality, what it did is that it kind of kept me all the time looking at that end goal, and it put these boundaries. I said, look, what if you got a super cool offer from Google in South Africa or in India? And for most people, it is an opportunity. It's an amazing opportunity. And it would be a real mental discussion you have with yourself. Should I take it? Should I not take it? How far along? What are my chances of getting in? Should I go for it? Should I not? Should I speak with the, you invest time like researching it, and then you speak with alumni and maybe you network. But for me, it was like, it was binary. It was like, nope. Is there a CEO and owner there? Nope. Is it in a, you know, a international market? Nope. Out. So 80% of the opportunities went away immediately. And for me, that was very useful because it allowed me to focus on that 20, to spend 80% of my attention on 20% of the things. And in an environment, we have so many distractions, that becomes pretty valuable pretty quick.
Now, we've talked about the INSAD story, and I don't know if you people know anything about Mikey and what he's doing today. He had mentioned it before, but one of his passions is podcasting, and he's developed an incredible podcast, so much so that if you look at his LinkedIn and you look at the headline before private equity real estate, which private equity is held up there with INSAD as one of the crown jewels of targets, and rightfully so. And yeah, then there's INSAD, which I will say it comes before being a Navy SEAL. So I know it's pretty hard, but I don't know if it's as hard as being a Navy SEAL. But hey, we're listed before. But the very first thing he lists is podcast hosts. So how did you get into this MBA Without BS podcast, which if you guys haven't heard this, there are some incredible conversations with people like Dan Ariely, Gabrielle Blaché, just fantastic subject matter. So I would definitely give it a listen on your run and walk. It's fantastic stuff. So how did you get into this? Why? What's the motivation?
So first of all, thank you for the publicity. It's something I'm very proud of, to be honest, because it was built one step at a time. It was quite painful, but now it's on a good roll. Now we paused it a bit to refocus it and reshape it. And it's going to be an amazing, I hope to get a season 2 by the beginning of 2021. And it's going to be an amazing, amazing season. How did I get to it? So as I mentioned, I did my MBA without undergrad. And after I got out, I had all these inquiries, right? People like, hey man, how'd you do it? Hey man, how'd you do it? Like, I heard you did that. It was like a secret, like the underground, right? Oh, you can get into an MBA without an undergrad because it's unusual. And I was like, yeah, I was happy to answer and to share and to mentor other people. It's a lot of fun for me, at least. But then about a year plus ago, I was working in PE and I felt like I need a side hustle or something else to do outside of, you know, of work. And I came up with two ideas. I was just visiting a friend in Sao Paulo for a wedding of a fellow NCATer. And I had some time to think. I said, look, I need to develop something like this, like a side hustle. And I had two ideas. The first idea, which was brilliant, and I hope someone takes it, was a skincare product line for divers. The second idea was to write a book about getting an MBA without an undergrad. Needless to say, I went for the first one, full throttle, for 2 months before I was like, this is not going to, my passion is not here. But then I started, you know, outlining a book, and I was like, this is challenging, you know, to write a book is hard. Maybe I'll just talk to people instead. And so I started talking with people to get the information. Like I did the outline and then I had to kind of fill it. And I spoke with people. And at a certain point, I was like, wow, these conversations are pretty valuable. Like maybe we should record them and have the world listen to them, because otherwise it's just going to be me. And I already kind of know this, but also it's pretty awesome. So that's how the podcast was born. I was listening, I think, to Tim Ferriss. She has like a few episodes on how to create your own podcast. And I just gave it a go. You know, I just started. And at first, it was terrible. It was absolute nightmare. And not because of the guests. They were great. But, you know, the sound quality and the structure and everything was bad. But after, you know, after 8 episodes, I interviewed Virginie, who is the head of admissions for INSEAD. And all of a sudden, the podcast blew up. She told me that, by the way, the same from her direction. She's like, I never got so much attention on LinkedIn. 300 requests, like friend requests or whatever they're called. And I was like, yeah, me, just like me too. And so we realized there's something here. I ended up interviewing a few others, like Donna from MIT and a few guys from CAS. And I was actually supposed to go on like a small roadshow when we were supposed to record our podcast like back in March in Europe. But then COVID happened and I found myself in Israel. And I was like, let's spend some time on this. This is cool. And it evolved, you know, it evolved, and I had some amazing opportunities to speak with outstanding people, Dan Ariely, Morris Kahn, Lior Suchard, Gabriel Boucher, like a bunch of incredible people, great storytellers, well-accomplished people. And through that, you know, I felt in the zone. You know, I still do. I grew, and that allowed me to bring that element of magic into my life. And I say magic, I mean it. Like something happens that you cannot explain when you have these meaningful conversations with people who are just amazing. And it happens on record and off record. And also you're able to form like these friendships with people very quickly. And it also like one thing leads to another, and they introduce you to their friends. And all of a sudden you're part of this social, you know, group that quickly you're part of the social group of like these amazing people. And the second part was the listeners. You know, we all of a sudden people started listening to this thing, and we got traction and we got listenership, and people from Pakistan like sent me messages like, hey man, you changed my life. I appreciate it. Like I listened to the podcast with the third one with Dan, and you know, I developed a positive approach to life. I was like, holy cow, this is real. And, I invite you to listen. I would appreciate your feedback. Please email, comment, you know, send whatever you want to send. It can be curses. It can be good things. Focus on the negative. It helps us improve. And then, yeah, I'm really, really excited to launch the next season.
Before I go into my follow-up question, I'm going to validate this, because if you're paying attention closely and you're watching LinkedIn, which you're very active on, from your engagements with Brian Golod, that wasn't just a transaction. That wasn't just a conversation that you had in a podcast. I mean, that's a real relationship. And the two of you show it by supporting each other in your own initiatives. And there's nothing fake about that. You can see the genuine attitude behind each comment that the two of you make, but it's that creation of that meaningful relationship. And I got to say that, you know, through every time that you and I have talked all the way back from the trek through to now, through this process of talking about the podcast beforehand and now doing it here, that meaningful element comes out. I want to touch on something that you said. You piqued my curiosity because you said that you're going to refocus and reshape. I'd like to take a look at how you're approaching the refocus and the reshaping of this podcast. What are the things that you want to change or evolve?
That's an amazing question. Here's what life taught me. Okay. Excuse me if this sounds cliche, but nevertheless, I am who I am. All right. So refocusing the podcast, I take an experimental approach in life. And that means that I try things and I fail. And I'm not afraid to fail. Meaning, you know, you try things and they fail and it's okay. It's not always pleasant, but it's a part of the learning process. And so what happened with this podcast was, you know, I just kind of threw something out there and it evolved, you know, it evolved. The beginning, like the first 10 episodes were challenging and difficult, and the intervals were irregular and the quality wasn't great, but it was like you get a lot of improvement in your first steps. And then after a while, you understand that you really learn how to do things. But the other thing that happened is specifically in the podcast, it shifted from being like MBA focused or MBA without BS focused without having an undergrad to like broader education, and then even more so to broader business issues, and eventually to broader life issues and matters and things basically that are of interest to me, and I hope for our listeners as well. But you know, episode 30 is very, very different than episode 1 in terms of of what it talks about, who the listenership is, who the guests are, and so on. And so I thought, you know, 30. A population of 30 is, you know, you can form, like, that's the minimal you need to form a normal distribution, right? So that was just like, I was like, oh, maybe we'll pause here for a second, evaluate what we've done, you know, learn some lessons and retune and reshape it. And the way what we're looking at right now, this is one idea. This is the first time I'm saying it on air, so feel free to be flattered, but.
and I am.
So what we're looking at, do you know what a brick and mortar building is, right? You have the bricks and you have the things that are the stuff that's in between them, right? The cement. So when you look at a brick and mortar building, you say, oh, it's a red brick, it's a white brick, it's a black brick. But no one talks about the mortar. And that's what we want to focus on. And what do I mean? The non-business elements of business, right? When you go to business school, you learn about strategy. You learn about operations. You learn about finance. You learn about whatever it is. you don't talk about the softer things, the ability to form meaningful relationships, how to stay motivated, you know, selling, maybe you do, maybe you don't. I haven't seen a business school that focuses on sales yet. Maybe we can talk about that. But, you know, the importance of ultimate importance of sales, how to, you know, how to build trust, all these things that are common to almost everything you do in life, and definitely that are common to almost all successful people and successful endeavors, but somehow they don't, you know, we don't talk about them. And so the goal, and as you can hear, it's not, you know, fully polished yet, but the idea is to focus on the things that are between the things, right? The less visible things that are between the more visible things. I call it the non-business elements of business, but it can be called, you know, the mortar or the whatever it is. I heard this nice fact about the Japanese street system. If you walk in New York, right, and on your left is 214 39th Street, on your right is 235 39th Street, right? The streets have names and the buildings have numbers, and that's how you find your way. So far, so good. Apparently in Japan, in some parts, maybe in all parts, it's the other way around, meaning the buildings have names, right? It's not called a Broadway Street. It's called that old red building, you know, or the old red building number one. And the houses are numbered according to the order in which they were built. So let's say this was the first house. It's number one. That was the second house. It's number two. And what it means is that the important things are named, right? In the U.S., let's say in New York, it's the streets. In Japan, it's the houses. Why? Because that's where people live in. Streets are just that thing between the important places, which are the houses and the offices and the whatever it is. So they're looking at it kind of the other way around. And that's what I'm trying to do in the refocused podcast, is to look at, to say that what's important is the glue that connects things and not the things themselves.
So when you're talking about this, I've just finished reading this book, and this guy is not just the lead guitarist and the captain of the band that I play in. A little slight plug for that there. It's the Inseyad band.
Whoa.
Yeah, but Charlie Galanik is also a renowned professor and author, and he just released this book, Backstage Leadership, and it talks a lot about these elements that you are talking about here. So it's hot off the presses too. So you'll be one of the cutting edge thinkers with these insights. But I love the story about the important things are named, and that those important things are houses where people live. What I want to talk about now is, you know, the important things, the important messages, that I think it's a great segue into what you'd like to leave with the audience. So knowing now what you know then, what would you say to an INSEADer or an aspiring candidate for an MBA program, or really anyone that's going through any stage of their life where they're trying to move forward? What a wise man once told me, you know, you got to leave your listeners with some tools. I don't know if that was you. It was probably you. But what would be those thoughts? What would be the tools?
First of all, thank you. It's definitely not a wise man, but I'm a firm believer in creating value, you know, for whoever you're engaging with, definitely with your listeners. And I think that you're doing exactly that, Charles. So I would say this. I do indeed believe, I'm a firm believer in giving tools, because I think we're all on a quest, on a journey to learn something. And, you know, the more you experiment with different tools, with you have more tools on your tool belt, you'll be better off, and you'll reach, or you'll enjoy the way, and you'll reach your destination. So my tools, I would say three things. But before those three things, I would give a general statement. You can only be you, okay? You cannot be anyone else. You can look up to other people. You can look up to peers. You can look up to professors. You can look up to leaders of countries. You can look up to historical figures. But you cannot be any of those people. You have to be yourself. And that's a general statement. Find out who you are. Invest time in yourself. And make sure that you are true to you. If you do something because it seems like the socially appropriate thing to do, if it's a big thing, I wouldn't go there. That's a general statement, and not rehearsed. It's just something that I feel obliged to say, because many times when you're in such a strong, you know, powerful environment such as INSEAD, you might get confused. And so don't get confused. Here are my three tools, okay? My three pieces of advice that I wish I would have known, or I would have, you know, emphasized more strongly before coming to INSEAD, but I'm very grateful to have to have had them and to have them and to keep on developing them. And I wish to share them with you. I would say the first thing, and this you might remember from our tours, you know, in the office. And I always ask, you know, what are the three most important things in any business? Do you remember, Charles?
I think the first one was sales.
The second?
I think it was sales.
And the third?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say sales.
There we go. So we have a saying, you know, in the where I grew up, in the company I grew up in, is that three things matter, and that is sales, sales, and sales. And that is to say, you know, from a business perspective, that's the only thing that drives your business forward. But from a personal perspective, from any perspective, sales is the one skill, you know, that will bring success to your life. And this is not like a car salesman-y pitch, whatever, hard sell kind of a thing, although that has place as well. But you have to be able to communicate your ideas, and you have to be able to exchange values. Someone gives you money, you give him something. And in order to do that, you have to learn how to sell. And you can do that through trust. You can do that through creating more value. You can do that through being cheap, whatever it is. Learn how to sell. Focus on learning how to sell, on how to communicate, on how to hand your ideas to someone and have him give you or gift you something in return. It's the single most important skill, in my view, to have in life, in business, in your personal relationships, with your family, with everything. Just take a sales course. Trust me, if you need recommendations, you're welcome to reach out. So first one is sales. The second one is having meaningful relationships, especially in INSEAD. I don't remember if we spoke, I'm skipping back a second. I don't remember if we spoke about like the entrepreneurship club, how we used to sell there. Did we talk about that?
Not in this conversation, but I know this story.
You know the story. Okay, I'm going to be brief because I don't want to waste anyone's time.
Great story.
When we were starting INSEAD, we were in the Singapore campus in Singi, and I was part of the entrepreneurship club. And we had this, you know, beer and entrepreneurship talks, right? So we said, oh, let's bring some entrepreneurs and have them talk about, you know, things they did, their successes, their failures. But to make it fun, let's bring like pizza and beer and go outside of school. And it'll be like sponsored by the entrepreneurship club. But we want people to pay a very small amount, but to pay for it. So they will be committed. And then we said, okay, we have to sell. How are we going to sell? I said, look, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to offer 15, and this is what we ended up doing time after time after time. So I said, I'm going to offer 15 tickets. That's all. We're going to take a small space. It's going to be cramped. We're going to have 15 people and the speaker. I said, I'm buying the first ticket, and each and every one of you are going to buy a ticket right now. Give me your money. Like right now on the spot, I was like, give me your money. Take out your wallets and give me your money right now. He's like, oh, I don't have to. Borrow it from your friend. I don't care. Give me $5 right now. So by the time we finished like the launch meeting, 8 tickets were out. Right. And then I called on a couple of classmates. So I was like, that same night, it was like, look, I need you to buy like 1 or 2 tickets. It's a really great speaker. Obviously, you know, we brought a great person and he's going to talk about, you know, how sales impact you or whatever. Okay, done. So let's say we started at 6 p.m. By 8 a.m. the following morning, we sold 12 tickets. And then I would launch an email to the class. I would say, hey, you know, we have this amazing speaker, Cliff Goh from Singapore. He's an investment banker. You know, he's great. And he's going to talk about the successes and the failures in starting a business, yada, yada, yada. The price for a ticket is $5. We had 15. We only have 3 left. And so people would get this email. And immediately I would get like responses like, I want in. I was like, first come, first served. You have to pay them. And so people would chase me in the hallways and give me like $5 to join this event. And then, you know, by 9 a.m., I would send an email saying, hey, guys, sorry, ran out of tickets. And I would get this, you know, this avalanche of furious emails like, hey, what the, like, what's going on? You know, you just opened it. How can you already be sold out? I want a ticket. And so we created demand, you know, just by creating scarcity. And obviously, this is like small scale. We didn't make a dollar off it, but it allowed people to get excited about the idea and to really come and to join and to participate and to be excited about it. And we kind of created a trend. I think we probably had like 8 or 10 or 12 of these events, and the method worked. So that's just one example of, you know, of selling. All good on sales?
Oh, I think we've got that one covered. I don't know if it's so much sales as it was extortion, but you know what? I'll allow it.
Look, if it worked for the mafia, it can work for us. You know? I think that the second thing is, and here I'll turn a serious note, to be able to build meaningful relationships is probably the one thing that allowed me to be happy in my life and mildly, you know, successful, at least progressing, right? To keep moving forward. You know, some people, there are a lot of names for it. I just call it building meaningful relationships. Some people call it like networking or whatever you call it, it's fine. But here's the thing. What works is to really bring yourself into a relationship and to, you know, to care about someone, to really be genuinely interested in what they have to say, in what's bothering them, and why is it bothering them? What's their story? You know, what can you bring to their life that would add value? And not think about, you know, what I can get out of them. Because maybe it's somewhere in the back of your head. That's okay. You can't always resist it. But you cannot go around, you know, being transactional, because first of all, that's not how life works. Like, you invest so much time and energy in building a relationship. And if it's all for just like this one off, then you're wasting your time and you're wasting the other person's time. Mm-hmm. And second, who likes to be in a relationship with someone just because they want something out of them? So if you can not be that way, if you can genuinely build, even if it's fewer, but just like try and build good, sustainable, growing relationship in your life, you're going to be so well off. I mean, you're going to enjoy it. You know, you're going to learn from people. People would want to give you, and you would want to give back just because it feels good. And to me, that's a major key to success. So sales, developing meaningful relationships. And by the way, if you want a tip on developing meaningful relationships, I recommend reading How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, an outstanding book. I read it probably 4 or 5 times. Unfortunately, I only got introduced to it in INSEAD. But once I did, I saw that every single person in my class read it, which was incredible. I was like, I never heard of this book. And now I see everybody read it. So it's recommended reading. So selling, developing meaningful relationship. And the third, last but not least, we touched on it briefly, is to focus. Focus helps. It keeps you, you know, in an area where you can control things. If everything is an option, nothing is an option. But if you say, look, I am making a conscious decision to give up on a lot of things that could have been really, really good, but I understand that would take a lot of mental, you know, computing power from me. And so I focus only on these few, 1, 2, 3 things, I don't know, consulting and investment banking, or only technology, or only being friends with people in my building or in Fonti, or I'm only going to spend P1 through 5 in single, whatever it is, whatever the parameters you're putting, if you allow yourself and then force yourself to focus, I think you will be better off. So those are my 3 tools. And I'm sorry for blabbing on and on, but some context sometimes helps. But you want to develop meaningful relationships actively and proactively. And you want to focus, decide, and then focus on the things, you know, that you, the things towards which you point your energy. And those are 3 things I wish someone would have like tattooed on the back of my eyelid, you know, at an early age, but definitely helped me personally. And I think could help others as well.
No, it's outstanding advice. And the perspective is applicable. I don't care what you're doing or where you are in life. If you just think about those 3 points of view, and selling is not just about the transaction or the adding value as well, influencing without authority, storytelling, there's so many elements to selling that are built in there. And you're exactly right. I mean, everything is sales. And you know, even when I went into my MBA and I said, I'm never going to do sales again, the very first job I took out of the MBA was in sales, because I you know, I fell in love and I was in France. And I want to stay in France. So I got to get a sales job because that's where people hire me. So, I mean, look, this is fantastic, fantastic conversation. And I've really enjoyed it. Mikey, I couldn't thank you enough for being the first guest on this show. I really think that this is going to be a conversation that a lot of people are going to listen to and take meaning from. So for that, thank you. For me personally, thank you as well. And I hope to hear more from the podcast in the future. You know that when I'm running, I'll be listening.
Thanks, Charles. I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity. I wish good health and lots of luck and success to everybody who's listening and to you. And we're also very fortunate, you know, to be a part of this INSEAD community. It really is a blessing, a gigantic blessing. Yeah. Hope to post COVID, hope to meet and maybe have this interview in person one day.
There we go, man. Let's do it. Let's book it. Let's set our dates for when the vaccine comes out. All right, Mikey, thanks so much.
There we go.